Welcome to Inside Ag from Kansas Farm Bureau, the voice of agriculture. I'm Shelby Varner. Today's topic of discussion revolves around the Supreme Court and California's Proposition 12 law. And in to share information on this topic is General Counsel and Secretary from North Carolina Farm Bureau, Jake Parker. Jake, thank you so much for taking the time to join us today.
Shelby, thanks so much. It's my pleasure to be with you.
To get us started here today, Jake, could you just give an overview of what this issue is involving swine in California?
California's voters back in 2018 passed a proposition that we call Proposition 12. It was a law that was enacted under California's referendum process. California has a process that allows for the people of the state of California to adopt laws by putting them on a ballot and having them dealt with through the referendum process. So Prop 12 is one of those laws. Didn't go through the legislature or any of those type of usual processes, I guess you would say, at least usual for us in North Carolina on the other side of the country. But the law deals with the production of certainly pork products, but also veal and some egg products. And eggs have actually been an issue in California for a while dealing with these type of restrictions. And the idea is the Humane Society of the United States and other animal rights groups and other organizations that have generally not had a very favorable view of agriculture or in particular hog farming, put this proposition on the ballot. They went through the process and their goal was to restrict the amount of pork or the types of pork products that could come into the state based on animal welfare standards. And so what ended up happening with Prop 12 is California adopted a statute or a law that says we will only accept pork products from other states if the pigs that became the pork product, the pork chop or whatever other product you have, that pig was raised or was born from a sow who was raised in a particular environment, a particular gestation stall or crate, however you want to say it, that meets a certain dimension. And it essentially allows the animal to get up, turn around, walk around, those type of things. So more of a pen system versus the individual stall system that we use. And their views were they don't like the way we do it. And so they wanted to change that and use California's market as the way to force people to do that. California consumers consume about 15% of the nation's pork, and they only grow pork producers in California, to the extent there are any, only grow about, I think it's 0.003% of the nation's pork. So the interesting difference was eggs was a much different situation. California is a large egg producing state, and so the restrictions it placed on its egg farmers, its farmers who grow those products, would kind of offset the national situation we have here. Really, what you've got here is California dictating to every other farmer in the state, or excuse me, in the country, what they're supposed to do in terms of raising pigs. And that is obviously a big concern for us in North Carolina, and certainly for your hog producers in Kansas.
So something as I read to get ready for this interview was it mentioned interstate commerce a lot. Could you go into how that terminology affects and impacts California's Prop 12 law?
Yeah. And this is where I'm just going to dork out as an agriculture lawyer. This is right in my wheelhouse. Let's go back and do a little history lesson. Back in the 1700s, after the Revolution, the states that were existing at the time, not Kansas, but North Carolina and all the original 13 colonies that became states, were when we won the Revolution, the states became independent or sovereign entities. They were like countries of their own. And they began to develop this relationship through what we call the Articles of Confederation. And the idea was the states made some agreements that they would do certain things certain ways. But one of the main issues that came out of that, one of the failures of the Articles of Confederation, was states were competing against each other in the marketplace. They were putting up tariff barriers to products coming into their states. And it was creating a significant amount of issues with respect to the flow of goods and services across state lines. And so New York may be taking a particular position on keeping apples from other states out of their state, for example. I'm just trying to think of something that might work. But the idea was that when the Constitutional Convention got together in the late 1700s, the idea was we need to address this issue. And so one of the things that, the Constitutional Convention did was they added a clause to Congress's power. So Congress derives its powers from the state. We have, you know, your three branches of government, legislative, executive, and judicial. And inside those legislative powers is what's called the commerce power or the commerce clause. And it says Congress gets to regulate commerce among the various states. It also has an international commerce clause that says Congress gets to regulate international commerce as well, but we can set that aside for a little while. But the idea was Congress said, we're going to take care of anything that's moving in commerce among the states. We, as a legislative body, get to regulate it. And therefore, the way North Carolina Farm Bureau, the way a lot of, I guess you would say, more conservative scholars read the Commerce Clause, it is an exclusive. Congress should be the only entity that has regulating power over commerce among the states. Now, in practice, that's pretty difficult to do. And so the court has struggled, the Supreme Court of the United States has struggled for years trying to figure out what's the balance between that. Where does the ability of a state like Kansas stop? Where is their ability to address issues that concern public health, welfare, safety? If there's a particular product or service that could harm somebody, what's Kansas's ability to say, no, we don't want that, good or service being sold in, Kansas or in North Carolina? Where is that line? That's really tricky. And so the Supreme Court has wrestled with that for years and years and years. And that's really the issue, though, here is the question is what California has done in Prop 12, does it violate that basic principle of the Constitution that this is something Congress should be regulating because it affects a national market? If it's California regulating its own people and its own farmers, okay, that's fine. Kansas has some unique statutes relating to agriculture that would impact only its farmers. So does North Carolina. In the context of hog farming, we have a moratorium on the construction of new housing for swine. And that's been a law that's been in place since the 1990s. But that only affects farmers in North Carolina. It doesn't extend out to farmers in Tennessee or Virginia or even Kansas or California. So those type of laws we think are permissible. And that's something, if North Carolina wants to do it, they can do it. But here, again, what California has done is just so sweeping and so broad. Because, again, to get a pork chop into California, you have to raise the mama pig in a way that meets their standards. And North Carolinians and Kansans didn't have any input into what that law was going to be. And so that's, I think that's really the issue there. But the Commerce Clause is at the heart of this. And there's this concept, I guess we'll get into it. I need to stop talking. But there's this concept of dormant Commerce Clause, which we can talk about a little bit too, that is really the focal point of the lawsuit.
Talking about California, the commerce, how does it impact swine producers across the nation?
I guess you would say the byproduct of what California has done is if you want to sell a pork chop into California, again, 15% of the country or consumers in the country will eat that pork chop, right, when it comes in. And so the idea is if you want to sell into that market, you're going to have to change your production practice to meet California's standards. And so for a hog farmer in North Carolina to go to this kind of pen system that you would have to go to, it would substantially change the way we do hog production in North Carolina, and I believe in Kansas as well, where we would have to either make modifications to barns, which, as I talked about earlier, in North Carolina is unique because we have this moratorium. So is a renovation to a hog barn in North Carolina, does that violate the moratorium statute we have here in our state? Or do you just make the renovations you need to make, assuming you can, and then shrink if you can't expand your operation or expand your barn, you're going to have to shrink the amount of pigs you can put in or reduce the number of pigs you can fit into a barn. And that's going to mess with budget cycles and all sorts of revenue and those type of issues. And so the changes are going to be substantial. And the reason for that is we don't know whether a pig that's raised in Sampson County, North Carolina, which is about an hour and 15 minutes south and east of Raleigh, one of the largest pork producing counties in the country. We don't know whether that pork chop's going to end up in New York City, Miami, or Los Angeles. You don't know. And so that's part of how the way the market works. It's so integrated that, again, a product in North Carolina can end up anywhere in the country. And we just can't trace back, so to speak, exactly where those animals are going. So everyone, if we're going to continue to sell into California, is going to have to make changes.
Jake, you mentioned obviously how this would impact the swine industry, but how could this impact other sectors of the agricultural industry besides swine?
Yeah, the direct impact on other industries is not yet clear. There's no, again, California's law covers eggs. It also covers veal. And there are some growers, a substantial number of growers of both of those products in California. So that changes the dynamic a little bit from a legal perspective, because one of the things if we get into dormant commerce clause, one of the issues that comes up is states can't discriminate against other states. They can't do things in commerce that would harm another state or commerce coming from another state. And so the issue gets, it gets hard to figure out. If you have a lot of producers of a particular product in a state and they're having to comply with the same regulations that everybody else is having to comply with, well, you really don't have too much of a commerce clause problem there. But it's when those effects on other states are so much greater than the effect in your state, that's where you start to have a problem, at least in our view, with the commerce clause. There aren't other products or crops that are affected by it, but you could see a scenario, and this is something that we can talk about as we talk about the Supreme Court case and where that went or where it's going. If California is allowed to act as a mini Congress, then you have this situation where, well, what's next? What other agriculture production do they not like? There's a lot of criticism, as you know, of poultry and you know, grown in CAFOs as well. And so poultry next, is turkey next, is in North Carolina, is tobacco production next, right? There are always things that people could go for. There are crop protection chemicals that our farmers use that could also be impacted by these type of statutes. So it's really a kind of, Prop 12 is a camel's nose under the tent.
Obviously, we see the impact that it could have on farmers and ranchers, but kind of getting outside of the agriculture industry, what impact could other people be seeing?
Well, consumers certainly in California will be paying more for pork that comes into their state. And that's one of the unfortunate things. Pork is a low cost, high quality protein. And people who may live on fixed incomes or have a lower socioeconomic status, they're going to be the ones who get hurt by Prop 12, because they're going to have to pay more for pork. Because if we're going to make the adjustments that we need to make to comply with the law, well, that's going to drive up the cost of production. And then obviously we'll get passed on to consumers. And so that's an unfortunate reality of the law. And then there's the potential that folks could just say, we're not going to sell into California's market, and just say, we'll just sell in other places and just make sure nothing goes in there. And so that may create supply issues, although I don't know about that, but that's at least in theory out there. Another real life example is just across the border in Utah, in Beaver County. We took our state board of directors to Beaver County, Utah, back in February of this past year, so they could see hog production out in Utah. And while we were out there, the Smithfield hog operation out there is incredible. And they have, you know, barns all over the place and just this massive, just incredibly expansive place. It's incredible to see it. But the Smithfield is slowly shutting down those operations because they don't want to sell into California anymore. And there are issues with production in California and actually slaughtering facilities, et cetera. And so for a number of reasons, Smithfield has decided to just shut down production in that part of the country. And in doing so, the people of Beaver County have lost a major employer. And so those type of impacts can also occur as a result of these laws. And Smithfield said part of the reason for their decision was the Prop 12 impacts.
Jake, you're obviously very knowledgeable on this topic and many things surrounding it. Kind of where do you see this court case going, or where is it heading right now?
Yeah, so a little bit of background on the case itself. Prop 12 was adopted in 2018, and in 2019, National Pork Producers Council and American Farm Bureau filed a lawsuit challenging that law in federal district court in California. Their theory is, as I've alluded to, the dormant Commerce Clause. And it's this idea that the Commerce Clause, which says, Congress, you have the power to regulate commerce among the various states. It also says states, the reverse of that, is states, you cannot regulate commerce in a way that impacts, as I said earlier, other states or people in other states who don't have the ability to engage in the political process that's going on in your state. And so Dormant Commerce Clause is a controversial view, and we did not anticipate that we, North Carolina Farm Bureau wasn't involved, but in my conversations with my friends at American Farm Bureau and National Pork Producers Council, kind of had an idea that the lawsuit wouldn't go very well in California courts. The precedent was just not really great. And their theory was what Prop 12 is doing is it is causing extraterritorial harm to other states. And so it's again, California exerting its market influence to tell hog producers in Kansas, hog producers in North Carolina, here's how you have to do it if you want to access our market. So the case went to the federal district court in California, and it was dismissed on what we call a motion to dismiss. So it's a very early motion in the case. We haven't had discovery. There hasn't been a trial. It was just lawyers filing briefs and papers, and then the court making a decision. And the court said, American Farm Bureau, National Pork Producers Council, you lose. They appealed that to the Ninth Circuit Court of Appeals, which sits in Sacramento, and the Ninth Circuit affirmed, but they're affirmed or said, District Court, you got the ruling correct. But in their opinion, they hinted at, we might have a different decision if the Supreme Court told us different. And so we, American Farm Bureau, National Pork Producers Council then filed a petition to the Supreme Court asking that court to hear the case. The Supreme Court only hears less than 1% of the cases it's asked to consider. And this was one of them. And so the case was heard and argued back in early October. I think it was October 11th or 12th. I can't remember. It was a month ago. Lots happened since then. But the Supreme Court heard oral argument on the case, and it was an interesting argument. The justices were really wrestling with this idea of dormant commerce clause. I think a lot of them understand that what California has done is unique, and they weren't so much focused on pork production, although that was something they talked a lot about. They also talked about what happens if other states start regulating products based on what you would call moral values. So the idea here is one of the main principles for pushing for Prop 12 was the value of eating humanely grown pork, right? Whatever that is. But the idea is animal rights groups and others said there's kind of moral problem with the way we raise pigs. And so the Supreme Court was wrestling with, well, if we're going to make other states comply with another state's moral opinions, then do we have a Commerce Clause problem here? Do we have an issue where, and this is just the reality of it. Let's just say we just went through all this stuff with COVID. What if California says we're not going to take any products from a state that doesn't have a really strong vaccine mandate? Or to get really political and not taking a position on the issue, I need to be clear about that. But the issue of abortion, if there are abortion restrictions in Mississippi, what if New York says we're not going to take any furniture products that are made in Mississippi because they have this abortion law, or any other kind of services? Or if it's, you know, so it just gets real. Or what is their position on ESG, right, on boards or environmental laws or environmental justice? There are so many examples you could talk about where one state is now fighting with another state over how they do things in their state. That's Congress's job. That's why we send people to Washington and let them hash it out in the House floor and on the Senate floor and write the laws for the country. It's not something, and I think that's where back to the Constitution, the framers didn't intend for this type of stuff to happen, in my opinion. We'll see what the Supreme Court says. I think as a technical matter, and this is my opinion, so take it for what it's worth, I think the court will send the case back to California. And so they'll basically revive the case because remember, it was thrown out at a really early stage. I think they'll send it back to California District Court and say, you need to go forward with the discovery process. You need to go forward to motions for summary judgment or a trial. And here's the rule, the legal rule we want you to apply as you do that. I don't know what the legal rule is going to look like because the court was all over the place. And so it could be that it's just go back and apply our law under this particular test, and it could be that. Or they could write something new that says, here's the standard court we want you to apply, go forward. So I think we'll win, so to speak, I'm doing my air quotes, we'll win, so to speak, but then you'll have some more litigation going forward. So I don't think we're out of the woods yet on Prop 12 and this issue. But the good news is for the moment, Shelby, that the Prop 12 is stayed. It's not in effect in California due to some California specific litigation that was brought by grocery stores and some other interest groups out there.
Jake, that is a lot of knowledge, and I appreciate you taking the time to share it with us and hopefully help others understand more about the topic. I appreciate it. Thank you.
Thank you. Appreciate the opportunity. I hope it wasn't too much information because we could talk about this all day. It's certainly an interesting issue, and it's a very important one for states like Kansas and North Carolina that have significant pork production. And let me say this. I want to say thanks to the Kansas Farm Bureau. We, as part of the legal process, when you go to the United States Supreme Court, there are a lot of briefs that get filed. And we were asked to file a brief, North Carolina Farm Bureau, the North Carolina Pork Council, the North Carolina Chamber. We were all asked to file a brief. And we knew that we needed to have some support from other states. Because if you just file a brief for North Carolina in the Supreme Court, they'll go, okay, that's nice. It's just North Carolina. It's some trade groups in North Carolina's opinion. But if you can get a national brief that's got a lot of different groups on it, you can get the attention of the justices. And Kansas Farm Bureau was generous enough through its legal foundation to provide some financial support and get their name on the brief. I work closely with Wendy Grady on the brief, and she does a great job for you guys. And so it was just great to see the Farm Bureau family, not just supporting American Farm Bureau by saying, hey, way to go, we're behind you, but actually filing a brief in the court, spending the resources and the time to make that happen. So I want to say thank you to Kansas Farm Bureau because it's a great partnership we have, and the issue affects all of us. And so I want to be grateful to your members who support you and to your leadership for being willing to take a role on sending in two Supreme Court briefs, which were effective, I think, in the sense that some justices read them. The oral argument indicated that they took some of our arguments and kicked them around a little bit. So that's a really nice thing. But I just want to say thanks to Kansas Farm Bureau for their support.
Well, thank you, Jake. We appreciate it. That was North Carolina Farm Bureau General Counsel and Secretary Jake Parker. If you'd like to read more information on this topic, you can go to fb.org and search for AFBF Presents Interstate Commerce Issue Before Supreme Court. I'm Shelby Varner, and this has been Inside Ag from Kansas Farm Bureau, the voice of agriculture.